Building on the last line of Kuf Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, the Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had described, okay, first we talked about a case where a person has a partnership with a Kohen, and we discussed that yesterday, when is he Chayev, in Zer, the Chayayim, the Keva, when not, then the Mishnah had continued, Vim Amalei Chutz Min HaMatonis, that if, when we talked about actually if a Kohen sells an animal to resell, so now we said, there can be a case where there can be a case when he sells the animal, where he sells only part of the animal, versus we said, Vim Amalei Chutz Min HaMatonis, if he told him, I'm selling you the animal, except for the Matonis, Potter Min HaMatonis, then it was Potter for Matonis, because then to begin with, they don't belong to him, they belong to the Kohen, and therefore the Kohen is thief. However, the Gemara says, I have a contradiction to that. Because the Braisa says, I'm a Nastra, I'm a Tonis Shali, that if the Kohen, when he sells it to the Yisrael, says, I'm selling you the animal on condition that the Matonis are going to be mine, so Noisim Lechol Kohen Shiyutza, the owner of the animal, the one who owns the animal, except for those Matonis, is now, well, not except for at this point, the Gemara is assuming it's the same thing, but yeah. So now the Yisrael is allowed to give them to any Kohen he wants. Meaning, in other words, even though he said, amanas, on condition that the matonis are mine, nevertheless, that tonight is not effective for reasons that we'll talk about in a second, and therefore you can give them to any kohen that he wants. The point is, the Gemara assumes that the same thing when we're talking about when he says except for the matonis versus when he says on condition the matonis are mine. The Gemara is assuming that those are the same thing. So the Gemara answers no. Amanasa chutz karamis. One idea is, because they don't fundamentally belong to him. After all, they don't belong to the owner either. Or we learned previously that there's toiv asana, the owner is allowed to decide who gets it, which can be considered to have a certain monetary value. But nevertheless, we can't say they actually belong to him. In effect, what it is belongs to all the Kohenim, and therefore you can't really make a tenai on that, because they don't belong to the buyer, that he should be able that the seller should be able to make a tenai. We show him ask then that, wait a minute, in that case, then if the tenai isn't fulfilled, then the whole sale should be bottled. Satoisvas gives one answer. We can talk about that, he made a condition that the matonis should be his, but nevertheless they didn't say that the sale should be bottled. They could have made the deal between them that fine, you're supposed to give me the matonis, but even if you don't, the sale won't be bottled. So it's not really like a binding almanas. Second of all, Tosfos says it can be called masna mashkos batorah. It's making a condition against something the Torah says. The Torah says that the matonis don't belong to the specific Kohen, and therefore, we have a general rule when you try to make a tenai against what the Torah says, then the tenai is bottle. This point of masna amasha kosa batorda, the fact that he's making a tenai on the Torah, other Rishonim explain that it's not really even the first explanation that Rashi says, because it fundamentally belongs to the Kohen, but rather to the Kohenim in general, and not to the specific Kohen. But rather, just because masna amasha kosa batara. So number of Rishonim discussed that point and explained that that's really the fundamental reason why the tenai doesn't work. Again, the Gemara is assuming that whether he says chutz, except for, or whether he says the tenai, the Gemara is assuming either way it's the same thing. So therefore, then the Mishnah and the Braisa contradict one another. So the Gemara says, no, amanasa chutz koramis, you're trying to point out a contradiction between saying amanas on condition versus chutz except for. The difference is chutz shiura. When he says except for the matanis, then it means he's leaving them out. It means, in other words, he's saying, I'm selling you the entire animal except for these parts. Amanas lav shiura. When he says amanas, he's not leaving something. Amanas, on the other hand, is not considered a shear. It's not leaving something out. It's just making a condition. I'm selling this to you on condition that such and such. Now, again, why the condition wouldn't be effective, we can talk about whether because it's not his to give away in the first place, or whether it's because he's making a tenai against the Torah. But one way or the other, that's the difference between when he says chutz and what he's saying. I'm selling you this entire animal, but I'm not selling you this part, and I'm not selling you that part. So that would be the difference. Rashi also points out that the reason we have to talk about it is the seller. We're talking about that the seller is a kohen. If Yisrael sells the animal and keeps the matanis for himself, then of course he's going to have to give them to a kohen because either one of them is chayiv to give to the kohen. But here, this is why we're talking about specifically where was a kohen who sold it to him. So even if a kohen sells it to him, so again, when he says chutz, then fine, the kohen himself is entitled to keep the matanis. Therefore, it means he didn't sell them in the first place, as opposed to when he says amanas. Then it means he's trying to make a condition, and again, that condition can't be effective for either of those two reasons, either because it doesn't actually belong to him, or because it's making a tnai against what the Torah says. Still, the Gemara says, fine, a reminu, but I have another contradiction. Another braisa says that if the Kohen says, I'm a nastra matonis chali, on condition that the matonis are mine, the matonis chaloi, then the matonis do belong to him. In other words, they actually belong to him, and therefore that even amanas would be valid, whereas in the previous braisa we said that not. So the Gemara says, behold, plikvi, well, there you actually have a machlokas between the braisas. Between our Mishnah and the first braisa is not a contradiction. We're just saying there's a difference between saying chutz versus saying amanas. Now we're saying that actually when it comes to, where you have two braisas, one with two different opinions about what happens with amanas, there in fact you do have a real machlokas between them, and the machlokas is, one opinion holds that saying amanas means you're leaving something out. It's like chutz of our Mishnah, and therefore, in fact, the kohen does still retain ownership and rights of those pieces. Whereas the other opinion holds that no, amanas is not considered leaving something over. It's rather considered he's trying to make a tnai, and that tnai won't be effective for either of the reasons that we discussed. So two different ways of looking at that. So in short, we have two possible cases. We have chutz and we have amanas. When he says chutz, then there's no question it's effective, as our Mishnah had said, because then he's literally retaining ownership of these parts. On the other hand, when he says amanas, then it may work or it may not work, depending on the different opinions. Okay. The Gemara continues. The Mishnah had said, "Omeli mahorbi v'neimei ahachola." We have a case where a person says to a butcher, "Sell me the internal organs of this animal." So we had two cases. So we said if he bought them, he has to give them to the kohen. But we said that in one case he would be entitled to. So we said if the matonis were in them, namely again one of the matonis is the keva, which is one of the stomachs. So then he would have to give it to the kohen. He wouldn't be entitled to a deduction from the price. He wouldn't be able to tell the butcher, "Well, you sold me something that I'm not going to be able to keep anyway. So refund me my money for that." He's not going to have that right. On the other hand, if he bought them by weight, then we said that he still has to give them to the kohen, but he is entitled to a reduction in the price because the keva doesn't belong to him. So the Gemara says, Rav says, "Lo shanu al shokol asmoi." When we're talking about over here, we're saying that in the second case, he's entitled to what are we saying over here? Now we're saying in either case, though, what we're saying is the implication of the Mishnah is that either way, the person who bought it is the one that's going to have to bring those matonis to the kohen. So we have one case where he has to give them to the kohen, and he's not even entitled to a refund of that part of the money, versus another case where he has to give it to the kohen, and at least he's entitled to a refund. The point is that we don't seem to have the butcher involved over here. So Amar Rav, lo shanu al shashok al asmai. So Rav says that would apply only if he weighed out, only if the customer weighed out the kishkis for himself. So in that case, then, So in that case, the butcher didn't even touch them, so therefore he really has no business with the Kohen. The Kohen can't come to him and say, you're supposed to, now we learned a few days ago, we learned how Dinim HaTabach, that there is really, it is supposed to be the butcher who gives the parts to the Kohen. Nevertheless, though, over here, the butcher didn't touch them from when the customer came in. The customer himself is the one who is the one who weighed them out for himself. So therefore, he's going to have to be the one who takes care of bringing it to the Kohen, and he's going to have to be the one in the cases where he's entitled to a refund, where he's going to have to go and bother the butcher for the refund. Aval, but Rav says, shokalai tabach, but if the butcher himself weighed out for him, hadinim atabach, then actually the Kohen's claim is on the butcher. So now, in other words, if the Kohen says, wait, I didn't receive the kaver from this, I didn't receive the kaver from this animal, then it means, in other words, so the butcher is actually going to be responsible to go and get it back from the customer and give it to the Kohen. Rashi refers to a Gemara in Bava Kamma, which discusses this point over here in a different context as far as the halachas of Gezel, and says that actually what it means is that it's either one. It means that the Kohen can go to either one of them. He can go to either the customer or the butcher and demand the keva from him. Mao Shaw actually points out that would only be according to one possibility in the Gemara there in Bava Kamma. So that's according to Rashi. We'll talk about soon that actually Tosfos and other Rishonim have a different understanding of what the Gemara means over here. But we'll get back to that in a minute. So that's one opinion. But Rav Asi says no. For the Shokal Loi Tabach, even if the butcher weighed out the kishkas for him, Hadin Imoy the. It's only the customer that the Kohen can go to and not the butcher. In other words, he's going to say, because after all the keva still exists, so therefore he has to go to where it is, and right now it's to be found by the customer and not by the butcher. Well, the Gemara says lema bedura chista kamifagi. Does that mean that there's the underlying argument about something that Rav Chista says? The Amr Rav Chista gozov lenisiyash rabbayim. This is why it comes up in Bava Kamma. Rav Chista says that if a person stole and the owner did not yet have yush, uvar achav achlay, and then somebody else came and ate it. Rotsim is a goyva. Then the person who owned it and it was stolen from can collect from either one. So because he didn't have yush. So one of them stole it, but the other one ate it, but it was before Yush. So either one of them is considered the Gazlan, and therefore he can collect from either one of them. So now the same thing over here. We would assume the Kohen has not yet had Yush. The Kohen doesn't give up on getting these Matzonis. So it sounds like the Mar is Sledir of Chista, Mar less Sledir of Chista. So it sounds like Rav agrees with Rav Chista's din, that Rav is saying that the Kohen can go to either the butcher or the customer, whichever one, which would match Rav Chista's din, or Mar less Sledir of Chista. Whereas Rav Asi disagrees and says that no, he can, it's one or the other. If the thing still exists, then he has to go to where it exists, whoever has it right now. And if not, then he has to go to the original. Then if not, then he has to go to the original one who took it. So in that case, then, so it would mean that so here it still exists. So he'd have to go to the buyer. And if it didn't exist anymore, then he'd have to go to the butcher. But not like Rav Asi says that he just goes. That here we're talking about it still exists. And either way, Rav Asi says he just goes to the buyer. So are they arguing about Rav Chista's point? So now here's Tosfos points out then, according to Rashi, the vote would be Rav were proposing that Rav agrees with Rav Chista's din, whereas Rav Asi does not. Tosfos actually doesn't like that explanation based on the relevant Gemara in Bava Kamma, and actually Tosfos actually learns the other way around. Tosfos and then a number of other Rishonim explain that no, when Rav says Adinim Atabach, when he says that the Kohen has a Din Torah with the butcher, I mean, now here, Rashi had explained, based on that Gemara in Bava Kamma, that it means with either one of them, either the butcher or the customer. So now Tosfos says that no, what Rav means is only with the butcher,
And then Rav Asi says, Hadina Imoy, that he can go to the Lekeach, it means either one. So it would actually be the other way around. So Rav Asi would hold like Rav Chista, that he can go to either one, and Rav would say, that the Rav would say, like another opinion over there in the Gemara in Baba Kama, like Rami Bahama, who says that, that no, he can only go to the first, only to the first one who stole it. In any case, would we have to say that Rav and Rav Asi are disagreeing about that point? Do we accept Rav Chista's point or not? And the answer is, the Gemara says, loy, not necessarily, de kula alma islahu de Rav Chista. Both of them may agree with Rav Chista's point, in a regular case. Here, the underlying machloikas, though, can be whether these gifts of the Kohanim are capable of being stolen. In other words, obviously, it's possible to physically steal them, but in other words, is it considered a gezel, is it considered an actual theft, such that it should have the usual rules? So now, Rav holds that, yes, the regular rules of gezel apply to them. So here, when the butcher weighed out the kishkis, including the keva, and gave it to the buyer, so that means, in other words, now he became a gazlan. So therefore, Rav is going to say that, he has to return them, and therefore, so now, in other words, the Kohen can go to the butcher. So he said, as Rav said, Adina Matabach, he goes now to the butcher and tells him, it's your responsibility, since as long as the keva still exists, it's your responsibility to go and find the buyer and get back the keva from him and give it to me. Because he would say this is a regular case of gezel. As long as the thing exists, then the gazlan himself is going to be the one who has to take the trouble to go and return it. Or Mar Sover, in Nigzolis, where Rav Asi holds that they it's not something that's subject to the dinim of stealing. And therefore, in other words, they're always considered to be in the property of the Kohen. Wherever they are, they still belong to the Kohen. Well then, in that case, so we can't say. So now, originally the first one was the Gazlan, fine, but we're not going to consider that Gezel. And now we're going to say, look, as a practical matter, the Kohen has to go to whoever they are now. So if now they're by the customer, he doesn't have any din with the butcher can tell him, sorry, they're not by me anyway, go away. And the Kohen wouldn't then have to go to the customer and tell him, you right now have this item in your possession, and you have to give it to me. So again, according to Rashi, it would come out that again they both agree with Rav Chista's underlying din, and the machlokas would be whether the dinim of gezel apply in this case at all. The Rambam has a whole different shita on it. The Rambam holds that what it means is actually even if the keva still exists, then he doesn't have to return it. He's able to eat it because in other words, what we're going to say is when Rav says over here matnas kohuna nigzolos, the matnas kohuna can be stolen, doesn't mean like Rashi is explaining that it means that the dinim of gezel apply to it, but on the contrary, it means in other words that basically once they're stolen, they're already, that's it, it's a goner, and therefore the kohen doesn't really have any ability to claim it. It's sort of like we learned the other day. We learned Rav Chista's statement a few days ago that if he was mazik matnas kohuna potter, that if a person damages the matnas kohuna, he's potter because they don't really have a specific owner. So the same way over here then, so if somebody bought them, then the Rambam learns the din would be that the Kohen doesn't have any further recourse because matnas kohuna nigzolos. Mefoshim on the Rambam deal in some detail with how exactly then the Rambam understands the back and forth in our Gemara over here. Okay. Now, so all of this discussion was predicated on, so we have our Mishnah, and we have with the case where he bought from a butcher by weight, and the question is whether he's entitled to a refund from the butcher or not, and that led us into this point about whether who the Kohen would go to the butcher or to the customer in order to recover it. So the Gemara points out, now there are some who teach this as a whole independent statement, not directly related to our Mishnah, but a more general, as a separate machlokas of its own. Rav ama matnas kohuna nigzolos, Rav Asi ama matnas kohuna in nigzolos, where Rav would say that the concept of gezel applies to matnas kohuna, and Rav Asi would say that it does not, or as the Rambam would learn, that it means that if they're stolen, then there's no further recourse, whereas Rav Asi holds that yes, so not necessarily tied to our Mishnah, but just a separate independent machlokas. Okay. The Mishnah says, "Gershinis Geir." If a ger became a ger, this is the famous thing. Why does it always say Gershinis Geir rather than Gershinis Geir? There's a famous explanation, I think, from the Chida that says that when a person becomes a ger, when a goy becomes a ger, he was born as a goy and lived his early life as one, but in reality. His neshama, he all along had a Jewish neshama, and just he didn't realize it. So therefore, that we call him Gershinis Geir. He has been all along a ger, and now just he finally realizes and actually carries that out and actually becomes a ger. Anyway, so here you have a ger, v'hoseloi parah. So he had a cow. So now, of course, as a goy, he's not chayev in zoril chayayim v'keva. As a Jew, he is. So the question is, when did things happen?
How can a goy have a neshama, even if he was supposed to become a ger? He doesn't have a neshama until he makes prayers, doesn't he?
He doesn't have a nefesh elik. He doesn't have a full-fledged nefesh elikis yet. That's going to come only when he actually becomes a ger. But it means, in other words, that he has something in him which is eventually going to motivate him to become a ger. So what does he have exactly?
A chida? What does he have?
He has a nefesh bahamis. His nefesh bahamis would be from klipas noiga rather than from sholosh klipas atmeis.
And that's it. Nothing else.
I don't know necessarily about all the ins and outs of neshamas, but yeah, it would seem that that would be the idea.
So the nefesh bahamis doesn't push you to become a ger.
But if his nefesh bahamis is from sholosh klipas atmeis, then it will, because then another not from sholosh klipas atmeis, from klipas noiga. Then it means, in other words, it has a certain degree of accessible kedusha in it, and therefore that's going to push him and motivate him to eventually actually become a ger. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In any case. So the Mishnah says, so again, Gershin is Geir, so a person became a Geir, v'hoiseloi parah, and he had a cow, and now the question is, when is he chayev in matonis or not? So nishchatad shlein is Geir, so if it was shechted before he became a Geir, potter, then of course he's potter, because a goy is potter. Mishin is Geir, if it took place after he became a Geir, chayev, then he would be chayev. Sofik, and if we're not sure when the animal was shechted relative to when he became a Geir, potter, then he's going to be potter, shamoitzim chaver levaraya, because you have the usual rule, if you want to collect something, then you have to bring proof, and here the Kohen would have to be able to bring a proof that it was shechted after the guy became a Geir, and if he can't bring that proof, then we can't make the ger give it to him. Now, this is a din d'araisa, and usually we say sofek d'araisa l'chumra, but when it comes to dinim mominus, then we often say not so, because with dinim mominus, we have this rule of amotzi mechaveh l'varaya, and therefore, and then, so we're going to talk about later on. Sometimes we are in fact machmir, by, as we're going to learn now in the Gemara, but our Mishnah is saying that you don't and you make. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ki osir Rav Dimi Omar, when Rav Dimi came to Babel from Eretz Yisrael, he reported, Rami le Rav Shimon ben Lakish le Rav Yechanan, that Rish Lakish pointed out a contradiction in this to Rav Yechanan. Now, and we learn in our Mishnah, Sofik Potter, that in the case of this Ger, when it's a Sofik, when the animal was shechted relative to when he became a Ger, then we said he's Potter because of the Sofik. Alma Sfeika Lakola, so we see that when you have a Sofik about Matnas Kahuna, then you're Mekel. Or a minu, but I have a contradiction from a din as far as matnas aniyim. Here, throughout our parak, we've been saying that there's a certain similarity between the matnas kohuna and matnas aniyim. These are both things where the Torah mandates that you have to give them, and both of them. Both of them have somewhat the same dinim in terms that you have to give them and they're not really yours and all you have is Torah Samna and so on and so forth. So we have a Mishnah as far as the dinim of Leket. We know, we learned a few days ago that you have the mitzvah in the Torah that if you're harvesting your grain and you drop one or two stalks, then you have to leave it for the poor people. So a Mishnah says, and ant holes that are in the field, and you find grain, and you find grain in those holes. So now that grain belongs to the owner. So if you find the ant holes are among the standing grain, so then they belong to the owner, because if they're in the standing grain, it means, that grain has not been harvested yet, so leket hasn't come into effect yet. So we assume that any grains that are in that area, the ants took from the standing grain, from the stalks that are still growing, and therefore, so it still belongs. It still belongs to the owner because he hasn't harvested that part yet. It could have come from a different area. There we see Amritzim Chaver L'Raya. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah. V'shal Achar Akoytzim. On the other hand, if you find it in the area behind where behind the harvesters, so it's already in a part of the field. That it's already in a part of the field that has already been harvested, and now leket may come into the picture. So hal yonim laniim. So then the upper grains belong to the poor people. Vatachtonim shabala bayis. The ones further down belong to the owner. Because in other words, we say that whatever is closer to the entrance is obviously what the ants collected more recently, and that's likely to be that at least could be that it's leket. It may have been during the harvesting, which happened very recently. Then ants took some of the kernels, some of the wheat grains, and took them to their hole. Batachtonim, but the ones further down, closer to the ground, belong to the owner because those were probably those the ants probably got before the harvesting took place. So now, one thing is, how do you understand what are the upper and the lower ones? So one way of looking at it is just that, in other words, you see how close it is to the opening. Another way of looking at it, the Rambam explains, you look at the color of them. You see if they're darker colored. And if they're darker colored, then it means that they were there. Then it means that they were there before. If they're lighter colored, then it means that they were collected more recently. In any case, fine. So the Tanakhama is saying then that you do that. If it's in the area where the grain is still standing, then the aniyim don't get any of it at all. If it's in the area which has already been harvested, then you need to look at upper versus lower, as the case may be. Reb Meir Omer Hakolaniim. On the other hand, Reb Meir says all of it goes to the poor people. Shasafik leket leket, because the doubt of leket is still considered leket. So now, why not Hamotz Mechavel Raya? We'll see soon. But in other words, he's saying, Rashi explains that Reb Meir would say, actually, even in the first case, where it's in the standing grain, we're still going to say that it may have come from leket, from a different part of the field. And Tosfos points out, in fact, that look, even according to the Chachamim, we're saying, the ones that are further down are almost certainly from old grain that the ants collected a while ago when the grain was still standing. So only because they're further down, then they belong to the owner. But if there was a suffix, then they would actually agree. They would also agree with suffix leket leket. So the question is really, according to Rashi, the question is from a mayor. According to Tosfos, the question is from the Chachamim as well. Actually, by the way, as far as the Rambam just says that if you find it in the area that was harvested, then it's always going to be. And it's always going to belong to the poor people. Suffix leket leket. In other words, in effect, the Rambam is paskening like Reb Meir. Anyway, the point is that fine. So the question is from Reb Meir then, especially if the halacha is like Reb Meir, as the Rambam says. But in any case, from Reb Meir and according to Tosfos, even from the Chachamim, you see that even in a case of suffix, and there it's a case of dinei mominus, because it's a question of whether this property belongs to the poor people, and the Mishnah is saying that you have to give it to them, whereas in our Mishnah we're saying that because of the suffix, you don't have to give the matonis to the kohen. So what's the difference? Amalei, said Rabbi Yochanan, answers, Al takniteini, don't start up with me, don't provoke me. Shabaloshin yochad, ani shona oisa, because I learn that Mishnah is, I learn that Mishnah is only one Tana's version of what Reb Meir holds. It's not universally agreed that Reb Meir holds that way. So, namely, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra, Oymer Meshum Rameyer, Sofik Leket Leket. Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra says in the name of Rameyer that some, when you have it, when you have grain that may be from Leket, then we have to consider it Leket. Sofik Shikha Shikha. Similarly, when you have a Sofik, whether something is Shikha, as we learned a few days ago, you have a case where you forget a sheaf of grain or an area or an unharvested area and you forget, then you have to leave that for the poor people. So also he says if you have a Sofik, whether it's considered Shikha, then you have to consider it Shikha and leave it for the poor. Suffolk payer payer, and similarly, if you have a doubt about payer, then you have to consider it payer. So fine. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra holds that a mayor holds that way, and therefore, whereas other Tanoim hold other Tamidim of a mayor held that a mayor learned differently, and therefore it's not a contradiction. Amalai. But Rish Lakish says to Rabbi Yochanan, "Al tishna oisa ela b'loshin den tadal." It doesn't matter. In other words, even if you who are you learning it according to? Even if you're going to learn the Mishnah in the name of den tadal, then you're still going to have a problem. Then tadal, Rashi says, is b'shem shoyta shiva olam shashmoy ben tadal. So apparently there was a known foolish person in those days called ben tadal, and therefore. Right, so the Shlokish is using his name as an expression like even if this is only some fool's version of Rav Meir's opinion, we still have a question. The different girsa, the Oro Chazik, there's a girsa Oral, not Todol, but rather Oral instead of that Tof and an Ayin and instead of the Dalet Aresh, which would mean somebody who's Aral Sfasayim, somebody who speaks very unclearly, or another explanation. Another Gersa is Ben Adol rather than Ben Tadol, which means somebody who was known to not be accurate in reporting things. So whatever, the point is that Shlokish is saying, doesn't matter whether you consider this comes from the most inaccurate or stupid person you know of, the fact is, Vatayimakamar, there's a good reason that Rabbi Meir is going to say, which we're going to learn soon, to say why we should say Sofik Leket Leket. So who cares whether that Mishnah is only one Tana's version, is only Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra's version of what Rabbi Meir said. The fact is, there's a logical reason over there. Why shouldn't we apply that same logical reason in our Mishnah? Namely, what is that reason? To Amr of Shimon Lakish, namely that Rish Lakish himself says, on the side it says that actually it's supposed to be to Amr Rish Lakish, my time in the Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra. Why does Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra hold that in the case of Sofik Leket, we should give it to the poor people? So he says, because my dichtiv, what does it mean, a posik in Tilim, oni v'rosh hatzdiku, justify the poor and the needy. So what does that mean? My hatzdiku, what does that mean? Justify them, or hatzdiku means almost more like favor them. Liris lois chus b'din. Rashi says it means like to find reasons to exonerate them in judgment. So is that what it means? Ilema b'dinim. Does it mean that actually in a din torah you should try to find something in his behalf? No. Voksi v'dol lois said b'river. The pasuk clearly says in Parshas Mishpatim, you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to favor a poor person in judgment. As Rashi says on the pesukim over there, you shouldn't say, look, this poor guy, you know, he's gonna owe a lot of money. Let's give him a break. Let's help him win the case. You can't do that. You have to judge on the merits. So what does the pasuk mean? Ani rosh hatzdiku. Ela, so Rish Lakish says, it means tzadik mishalcha v'ten loy, means justify and favor him with what's yours and give it to him. So in other words, you don't know whether something should belong to the poor people. And hamotzim chaver l'raya, nevertheless tzadik mishalcha v'ten loy, be just and be righteous to him and give it to him and let him and give it to him and let him have it. So therefore, Rish Lakish says, that would explain Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning. That's a very good reason why to say that you should leave it for the poor people. So then in that case, for Shlokish is saying, what are you telling me? The Mishnah is only according to one Tana. It may be only according to one Tana, but we still have to understand, then why shouldn't we apply this Pasuk and the din that we infer from this Pasuk? So now we should assume also by the same token, the Gemara is assuming maybe that the Kohen is also considered to be Oni Vorosh, because after all, he doesn't have land in Eretz Yisrael or anything like that. So therefore, when you have a question of whether the Matnas Kohuna belonged to him or not, you should do in his favor and give it to him. So that being the case, then why is our Mishnah saying that you don't? Okay. Now, of course, if the question is only according to the mayor, then we could answer back. Well, the Chachamim, then the Chachamim disagree. And again, Tosfos is saying the question is really not just from a mayor. The question is really from the Chachamim as well, because even the Chachamim apparently accept the basic concept of Suffolk Leket Leket. They're just saying in this particular case, you have because they're further down in the hole. And then therefore we should we can assume that they're from old grain. But anyway, so that's one way of putting it. One point is actually the Vilna Gaon gives an explanation that actually the Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Rish Lakish is exactly on that point. So here the Chachamim say that the owner can keep it, but now that would be Rabbi Yochanan would hold that there is in fact a machlokas. Rish Lakish would hold that we're not. So therefore, according to Rish Lakish himself, then everybody agrees with this concept that you have tzaddik mishochav v'tenloi, and therefore, so how does it fit with our Mishnah? Okay. So Amar Rava. So Rava says the difference is hocha pora b'cheskes p'tura kaima, because here the cow has a chazaka of being potter, because after all it belonged to a guy. As opposed to koma b'cheskes chiyuv kaima, as opposed to the standing grain has a chazaka of being chayav because it belongs to a yid. So if we look at the previous chazaka, then we're going to have a reason to say that the cow, the previous chazaka of it is that it belonged to a goy, and therefore it's potter for matonis, as opposed to the grain over here, to begin with, belonged to a Jew, and the likelihood is, the chazaka is therefore, that it's going to have leket given from it. So in fact, an interesting point in that regard is the Ran learns from that when do we say that you have to be chayev when you have to be chayev in a suffix is only when there's a chazaka. On the other hand, there are rishonim and achronim actually who disagree with that, and they say that a number of achronim disagree with that and say we don't mean what we're talking about over here is not a regular chazaka after all, because the chazaka over here doesn't really tell us doesn't tell us anything about this particular grain. We don't know whether this particular grain is going to become leket. So they understand that it means that the chazaka just means, in other words, you, the owner, have a chiyuv of leket, and therefore we have more reason to say that it should apply to you. So in other words, even when there's not a specific chazaka on it, then achronim agree that then achronim hold not like the Ran, and it means, in other words, that you would have to give it away, in other words, that the chazaka doesn't really make such a difference as we're saying over here. Okay. So fine, when the chazaka tells you a reason to say that you're potter, in other words, basically according to the Ran, the vote would be that fratek, when you have the chazaka tilts towards the side that you're chayev, then you're chayev, but otherwise you'd be potter, as opposed to the Shagas Arya, and talks about the other way around, only if the chazaka tilts towards being potter, are you allowed to keep it, but otherwise, if you don't have a chazaka, then you would actually be chayev to give it. Okay, so that would be the difference. So the Gemara continues, Omale Abaya, but Abaya says to Rabba, Vahare Isa. Yeah, but consider the case of a dough, whether it's chayev and challah or not, and you have a similar din over there, Nasa Sanchalinis Gayer, that if you have a batch of dough that was made before the owner became a ger, potter min challah, that's potter from challah, because of course challah applies only when the person is a Jew. Mishin is Gayer Chayev, but if it was made after he became a Ger, then he would be Chayev, and we consider made or not made means when the flour and water are mixed together. Suffolk, and if we have a doubt, Chayev, then he's Chayev to take Chala from it. Now, here you have a Chazaka, he was a Goy before, it should be the same kind of Chazaka as in in our Mishnah, and yet in our Mishnah we're saying he's potter from Matonis, and in that Mishnah in Chala we're saying that he's Chayiv in Chala. So what's the difference? So the answer is Amalei. So Rava says Shabbai. The difference is Suffolk Isur Lachumra. When you have a Suffolk of Isur, you have to be Machmer. Suffolk Mamoina Lakola. Only when you have a Suffolk on money can you be Makel. Now here, when it comes to Chala, it's not just a matter of money. It's a matter of Isur. You're not allowed to eat from dough. You're not allowed to eat from bread that Chala has not been taken from yet. A person is Chayiv Misa B'Dei Shemayim for it. So therefore, we can't rely on a Chazaka as opposed to Matonis, as we've been learning all this time. There's no Kedusha in it. A Yisrael is allowed to eat it. It's just a matter of moment. Well then, Hamotzim Chalei Alav Harayim. So that would be So that would be the difference. Now the Rosh does say that he wouldn't, even in that case, for example, he wouldn't have to give the challah to the Kohen, because again, that would already be a monetary thing. He can't eat it because he's a Zor. So fine. He could sell it to the Kohen maybe or whatever. But the point is he would have to separate it, because otherwise there's Misa B'Dei Shemayim involved. And the Gemara says, Zomer Rav Chista, as in fact Rav Chista said, B'chein Toni Rav Chia, and similarly Rav Chia taught in a Braisa, Shmoina Sfekas Nemru B'Ger, there are actually 8 cases of a Ger where there is a Suffolk, because in each case you can, in various dinim, where you can have the Suffolk whether he became a Ger before or after something, Arba L'Chia V'Arba L'Ptur. And of those 8, four of them he's going to be Chayev, and 4 of them he's going to be Potter. And we're going to work out why you have these distinctions. So what are they? The 4 that he's chayev, korban ishtoi. First of all, his wife's korban. So if the husband and wife both became gerim, and now you don't know when she gave birth, we don't know whether she was still a goita or after she became a geyrus. So then, she would have to bring a korban. She would have to bring a korban, because otherwise there's a chiyuv koris involved, because otherwise she's a mechusar kapara. She's not going to be able to ever enter the Beis Hamikdash or eat kodshim if she doesn't bring her korban. If she does, then she she's going to be chayiv koris. So therefore, she has to bring the korban. So she has to bring the korban just to be on the safe side. A woman who gives birth brings an ola and a chatas, the chatas of the bird. You're able to bring a chatas of a bird because of a suffix, as we've learned a number of times already in the Seder, and as we're going to learn as we go through, especially in the Sefer Kinim, we'll learn next year, Bez Hashem. So she can bring the chatas, it just can't be eaten because it's a suffix. As far as the oila, it's easy enough because you can bring an oila as an adava, and therefore you can bring an oila as a voluntary thing in the first place. Okay, so the korban of his wife is one case where he's chayav. Chala is also the case of chala, because like we said, there's misa B'Dei Shemayim involved. Ubechor behema tahor tmeya. The third one is, if his donkey has a firstborn, and we don't know whether, and then if his donkey has a firstborn, and we don't know whether it was born before or after he became a ger, so he's going to have to give the sheep to the Kohen as pidyon for it. Rashi points out this braisa would be following the opinion, which we're going to learn in Masechet Bechoros, that the donkey is actually osa bahana until you redeem it. So therefore, he's not going to have to give the sheep to the Kohen. He'll be able to keep it because I'm Motzim Chavela Varaya, but at least he has to designate the sheep on behalf of the donkey. We'll learn in the Sefer Bechoros, Bez Hashem, soon, that actually there's another opinion about that that says that, in fact, so you have machlokas tanoim, whether in fact it's osabana until you redeem it. If we say it's not osabana, then you don't even need to designate the sheep. If it is, then at least you have to designate the sheep, but then you can give it, then you can keep it for yourself, because I'm Moitzim Machavela Varaya. Okay, so that's the third thing where we have to be machmer according to this braisa. And the fourth thing, over chor behema tahora, and if his kosher animal has a firstborn. So again, if he was a goy at the time, he'd be potter. If not, then he's chayev. And here you have the problem, this shchut echutz, because after all, the bechor is supposed to be a korban, it's kodshin, and you can't shecht it outside the azara. So if he does, he'd be chayev koris, so therefore, as we're going to learn in the Sefer Bechoros, you have to wait till it develops a mum, but therefore also, because of the suffix, he's going to have to treat it as a bechor. He wants to give it to the kohen again because he wants to give it to the kohen because I'm Moitzim Machavela Varaya, but at least he'll have to designate it, at least he'll have to keep it with the status of a bechor and wait till it develops a mum, etc. So all of those, the chiyuv, those are 4 cases where we apply a chiyuv to him because we don't know whether these things happened before or after he became a ger. On the other hand, continues Rav Chista or Rav Chia and Rav Chia's Braisa. On the other hand, you have 4 things where he's potter because of the suffix. Reishis Hageiz, to give the shearings of the sheep to the Kohen, which are the subject of the next parak. Vamatonis, and to give Zura L'Chayayim B'Teva, like we just talked about. Or Pidyon Aben, to do Pidyon Aben, if his wife had a Bechor, and we don't know whether it was before or after she became a Geyrus, or Pidyon Petach Hamor, and to actually redeem the firstborn donkey, as in to give the sheep to the Kohen, the Ptur, all of those are Potter, because all of those, there's no Issur involved, it's just a matter of Mammon, and I'm Moitzim Machavela Varaya, therefore. Tosfos points out, we did learn a couple of days ago, we learned an opinion that said that the that actually before the Zerai L'chaya and the Keva are given, you're not allowed to eat from the animal. According to that, then it should have listed the Matones as well, because the fact is, it would be the same kind of thing as, for example, the Bechor Behemet Tmeya, where you have to separate the sheep, but you don't have to give it to the Kohen. Here you would have the same distinction as well. You would have to separate the Zerai L'chaya and the Keva, but he would be able to keep it for himself. Okay, but in any case, this Braisa and Rav Chista and this Braisa don't hold that way. It's just a matter of moment, and I'm Moitzim Chavel Ranaya. Okay. So that's the answer. So again, to recap, in the case of Leket, in the case of Suffolk Leket, first of all, it's only, so first Rabbi Yochanan had said it's only one version of what Rav Meir says. And then Rosh Lakish said, yeah, but the fact is, we have a logical reason based on Oni V'Rosh HaTzidiku that he should be giving it to him. And shouldn't the same thing apply to Matonis? So we said the difference is Chazaka. You had a Chazaka of being Potter. So what we said now is, the Maskana, we said it depends also, not just on Chazaka, it depends also, is there a severe Isser involved, an Isser of Kodis or Misas Vestin? If there is, then we're going to make him do it anyway, Misafik. In the case of Zerulach, so that explains, so in the case of Leket, there's no severe Isser, but there is this point of Oni V'Rosh HaTzidiku. But in the case of Chala and in the case of the Korban for his wife and so forth, there we have cases of Isser where there's actually an Isser Kodesh involved, and therefore he has to do it Misafik, as opposed to an Or Mishnah. When we're talking about the Matonis, there's no Isser involved, there's no Chiyuv Kodesh or Mrs. Dastian or anything like that, or Mrs. Bidei Shemayim or anything like that involved. It's a mitzvah to give them. There's no issue of eating the meat if you don't give them. So therefore, he doesn't have to do it in the first place. Okay. So now we started the discussion by saying that Rav Dimi had explained that Rish Lakish actually pointed out a contradiction between our Mishnah and the Mishnah about Leket. So Ki Osa Ravin Omar. On the other hand, when Ravin came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported Koma Akoma Romile. Actually, the question that Rish Lakish asked was not about the 2K, was not about the part of the Mishnah that talked about the harvested part of the, about the harvested part of the field. It was rather about the different, about where it talks about the unharvested part of the field. Namely, Rashi says there was another Braisa that Rish Lakish found, which we haven't yet reported, where Rav Meir says that by a ger, also you have the suffix, whether it was harvested before or after he became a ger, and we say that he's Potter, whereas before we said Suffolk Leket Leket, and then Rabbi Yochanan answered him in the same way that version of Rabbi Meir, that's a Suffolk Leket Leket, is only according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Agra, and the other Talmudim of Rabbi Meir disagree with that. So in other words, in Ravin's version, it had nothing to do with our Mishnah. It was just about different dinim within Leket itself. So one point is, before I should point out that before in Rav Dini's version we were saying that the same question would be about Matnas Kahuna, because the assumption was that this Oni V'Rosh HaTzidiku would apply again not just to Aniyim, not just to the poor people, but also to the Kohenim, because again the Kohenim have no portion in Eretz Yisrael. On the other hand, in Ravin's version, we're not saying that. We say that it really applies only to a poor person and not to a Kohen at all. And therefore, in Ravin's version, the question was not even asked in connection with our Mishnah. It was obvious that he should be Potter, because we can't apply Oni V'Rosh HaTzidiku, and there's obviously no Kodesh or Mrs. Basin or Mrs. B'Dei Shemayim or anything like that involved either. And the question was strictly within Leket itself. Okay. The Gemara continues. Levi Zora B'Kishar. Levi one time planted a field in the city of Kishar. And Veloy Havo Aniyim Lamishko. There were no poor people over there to collect the leket. Lamishka leket. There were no poor people to collect the leket. So inevitably, when you're harvesting, you drop some grain a little bit here and there, and you're, as we've been saying, you're supposed to leave it. You're supposed to leave it for the poor people. So now, but there's no poor people. What should he do? Also, a Kamei de Rav Sheshes. So he came to Rav Sheshes. What to ask? What to do? An interesting point is that Rav Sheshes lived in Bavel. The Levi that we're talking about over here, usually Levi in the Gemara, usually means an Uli Amora, Talmud of Rebbe, but now he wouldn't be coming to ask Rav Sheshes, who lived several generations later, so evidently this is a different Levi. But in any case, more to the point is this is obviously taking place in Bavel. Now, Minat Torah, all these dinim apply only in Eretz Yisrael. So it would mean that Midrabanan, they apply in other cases as well. They would apply in other countries as well, although some say it would apply everywhere, and some say that it would apply only in countries near Eretz Yisrael, such as Bavel. In any case, he came to Rav Sheshes to ask, what should he do? There's no poor people available to take the leket. Amalei, so Rav Sheshes told him, you know, the pasuk says, La'oni v'lager tazavosa. You should leave them for the poor and for the ger. That implies dafka for them. Don't leave it for the ravens or for the bats. So no, if poor people are not coming, then don't leave it out there where all that's going to eat it is birds and bats. Instead, go ahead and take it. Go ahead and take it on the face of it. It means take it and keep it for yourself. So that's what you want to ask. Basically, though, I have a contradiction. A braisa says, "Ein mevien truma lemigurim le'ir." You don't bring the truma from the greenery to the city. V'lemi midbar le'yishuv, or from the literally midbar means the desert, but it basically means an uninhabited area to a settled area. The koyan himself goes out to the greenery and collects the truma over there. In other words, not that you're not allowed to, but you don't need to. You don't have to be matriach. You leave it over there, and the koyin will go and fetch it for himself. V'im ein sham koyin, however, if there's no koyin, circle paro mavia, then you hire, you rent a cow, and you bring it to a place where you can store it. So in other words, if your granary itself is a safe place, then you can leave it over there. But the point is that if it's not safe, if animals are going to come or whatever and get it, then we're saying you hire an animal to transport it, or via, and you put it someplace safe, and they have said truma, because otherwise the truma is going to get lost or damaged. Hagoy Sabach says it's supposed to be not hefsed truma, but rather hefsed koyin, because otherwise the koyin are going to lose out. So we see that you are actually obligated to store it someplace safe. So why is Rav Sheshes telling Levi that you can just keep it for yourself? If there's no aniyim around, then he should be telling Levi, go find a place for it in a secure storage area and keep it over there. And the answer is shiny truma the tovla. The difference is that truma, without taking truma, the produce is going to be tevel. V'lei sagi, v'lei mafish la. So it's impossible without separating it. You're going to have to separate the truma anyhow. If there's no koyin, then if there's no koyin, then fine, you don't have a koyin to give it to, but you already do have to separate it out anyway. And once truma is separated, then you have a din that we know that you have to guard truma, prevent it from becoming tamei, prevent it from being destroyed, etc. So therefore, the Chassam Sofer explains that's the question: why would you have to designate the truma in the first place if there's nobody to take it? And the answer is because you have to designate it, because otherwise your produce is tevel, and once you do, then it has the dinim of truma, and therefore you have to preserve it. So as opposed to leket, where the produce is not also to eat if you don't take the leket, if you don't give the leket. So therefore, so it doesn't have any, the leket doesn't have any intrinsic kedusha. So therefore, so that's why Rav Sheshes is telling him to go ahead and keep it. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Vari matonis to lay tavli." Okay, but the matonis, the zroi l'chayayim v'keva, don't render the meat tevel either, because as we've been learning all along, according to most opinions, and this is the halacha, that that even if you don't give the zeroy l'chayayim v'keva, the meat is still mutter to eat, v'tanya, and yet we learn in a braisa, mokam shenagu limloy ba'agolim, in a place where they have the minhag to do maliga with calves. Maliga is that they want to be able to get off the skin more easily, and to be able to get the hair off more easily, so therefore, so they would, they would put them in boiling water, and then they would, so what it is it actually explains, they would do it as like a partial cooking. They would put them they'd scald them in boiling water, still in the skin, and then, first of all, it helps the hair come off, it also makes the skin softer, and then they'd be able to eat it with the skin. So in places where they do that, lo yakshitas azroya, then don't strip the skin off of the zroya before giving it to the koyin, because you instead give it to him with the skin, and then the koyin can do the maliga with this, and do it. Doing maliga, by the way, is not quite so simple as far as the dinim of kashrus, because you have to make sure that you do a proper malicha first, otherwise you're going to end up cooking, the blood inside it. So we're not really getting into that point really over here. So definitely you would have to do it in a way that observes the laws of kashrus. But the point is, in other words, where that's not an issue. Let's say, for example, that you tack a salt in it and you did all that. In any case, so in a place like that, you can't strip the skin off because you have to give it to the Kohen with the skin, and then he can prepare it that way if he wants to. Similarly, if it's a place where they skin the head, then don't skin the jaw before giving it to the Kohen, because you have to give it to him with the hair and with the skin on it. The Kohen can use those as well. The ancient Kohen, then, however, if there's no Kohen over there, then fine. Malin Oisim Medomim Ba'ofon. Then you evaluate how much the Zroil Chayayim the Keva are worth, and you can eat them if they have said Kohen, because otherwise the Kohen is going to lose out, because then the money won't spoil. So when a Kohen comes by, then you'll give him the money. If you were to wait until you give him the meat, then it'll be spoiled already. Truma, you can't redeem, so therefore you have to put away the Truma actually itself. Rashi over here says he would give it to the first Kohen who shows up. The Rambam says that actually he can give the money to any Kohen he wants. The point is, in other words, that fine. The point is, we see that even with the Zroi L'chayayim V'keva, you can't just keep them for themselves, for yourself. You have to set aside the money. Well, then why by the Leket, why is Rav Sheshes telling Levi that you could just keep it for himself and not telling him to figure out the value of it and set that aside for the poor people? The Rif, by the way, has a different gyusa over here. It's not even a matter of Mokum Shinagu Limlog. His gyusa is that in general, Lo Yakshet to Zeroya, in general, you're not allowed to strip off the skin from the Zeroya. You always have to give it to the Kohen with the skin. Anyway, again, the question is that over there, we're seeing that when there's no Kohen, you can't just willy-nilly eat the Matnas Kohuna. You have to first figure out how much they're worth and set aside an equivalent sum of money to give to a Kohen later on. Why, by the Leket, is Rav Sheshes not requiring Levi to do that? And the answer is shiny matnas kohuna dinasinah ksivabe, because by the matnas kohuna it says nesina, it says v'nosam lakoyin, you should give it to the kohen, so therefore that means he's required to give it to the kohen no matter what.
Why don't we just say that if there's no kohen, he has to give it to the Bedek Habayis? So
it doesn't work that way. This is one of the matnas kohuna. It doesn't belong to Bedek Habayis. This is one of the matnas kohuna. So it has to be given to a kohen. The same way as you can't say that you're going to give truma to Bedek Habayis or something. No, the matnas kohuna go to the kohen.
Bedek Habayis can give to the kohanim of the temple.
They could, but that's not how it works. I mean, if you want to give something to Bedek Habayis and tell them to distribute it to the kohanim, go right ahead. But these things are meant for the kohanim themselves. By the way, I mean, the Lev Arya points out, you know, here we said before, Hamazik Matnas Kohuna Potter, that if a person damages or eats the Matnas Kohuna, he's Potter. But over here, the point is that to begin with, we're telling him, before you eat it, go set aside the appropriate amount of money. So for that matter, also based on other Gemaras, it comes out if Kohenim are available, you can't just say I'll give you an equivalent amount of money. You have to give them the actual Zeroi L'chayayim V'keva. Okay, in any case, the point is by Matnas Kohuna, it says Nesina, and therefore you have to give them to the Kohen. You have to give them to the Kohen eventually, as opposed to by Leket, the Torah doesn't say give it to them; it just says Tazov, leave it for them. And again, we said it doesn't mean leaving it for the birds and the bats. So that would be the difference. Okay, the Gemara says
Nesina has to be directly to the person.
What?
A Nesina has to be directly from one.
Well, the pastor said, I don't know, maybe it can be through a Shliach. I guess it could be through a Shliach. We talked about the other day, we talked about a couple of times in the last few days about people would send the Matnas Kohuna with their children. So fine, it doesn't have to be that you give it directly face to face. But at any rate, the point is that you have to give it somehow, and therefore that means you also have to give the monetary value. Okay, the Gemara says, Hashtad, Osis Lahochi. You know what? Now that you reach that point, now that you're distinguishing where it says Nesina, Truma Nami, Nesina Ksivbe. The fact is, like Truma, it also says Nesina. It also says, Rishis Goncha, etc. Titan Loi. So therefore, you have the same point, that therefore you have to give it to him no matter what. And that explains why you have to store it away safely. So the Gemara asks, Vela Tazov Yisera Lomali. But by Leket, it says in two different places, it says Tazov, you should leave it. So doesn't that mean that it should mean that you should leave it? So one would be to tell us that you have to leave it for the poor people. And the other one, the Pashtus, would teach us that you store it away even if there's no poor people. The Gemara answers, no. L'chidatanya, that second one teaches us a different din. Hamafkiris karma, if a person declares his whole vineyard hefker, all of shachar hishkum ubotzer, and then the next morning he woke up early before the poor people came, and ubotzer and he harvested the fruit, chayev a peret of oilus of a shitcha v'peya, he's going to be chayev in peret oilus shitcha and peya, which we learned earlier in our peret, are the matnas aniyim that come from a vineyard, because
Now, those don't apply to Hefker, but those don't apply to Hefker. But over here, it's not Hefker anymore because here he took it back, and because it says extra tazoy, then that teaches us that that even if it was Hefker at one point, because it's not Hefker anymore, then therefore now he has to give it to the poor people. Or Potter, and a Meiser, however, it will be Potter from Meiser, because there you don't have the extra Tazov, and therefore, so it was Hefker at some point, and therefore it remains Potter, and he doesn't have to give Meiser from it. Okay. The Gemara tells more about the Matnas Kahuna. It happened once that a bag of gold dinarim had been brought to the Beis Medrash. Kodim Rab Ami v'zocha behen. Rab Ami got ahead of everybody else and was zocha and acquired the coins. The Gemara says, "Hecha oved hochi." How could he do that? We said about the Matnas Kahuna that you should be given to the Kohen, not that the Kohen takes it himself. We even learned yesterday about the whole matter of even asking for it is not really proper. So why is So here we're talking about matnas aniyim. So why is Rab Ami grabbing it for himself? And the answer is Rab Ami nami aniyim zochaber. It doesn't mean he's keeping it for himself. It means he's taking it on behalf of that he's going to give it to the poor people. Now the idea would be, in other words, it was meant for the Bnei HaYeshiva, but because he's the Rosh Yeshiva, then he's able to decide that instead it should go to somebody else. So that's the Lev Aryeh gives that explanation that even though the donor, the Pashkus meant it for the Bnei Yeshiva, Rab Ami has the right to change that and decide that some or all of it should go to the Aniyim. Another point is, to begin with, maybe the person didn't even intend that it should all be for the Talmidim. He left it over there. Whoever gets them will have them, and therefore Rab Ami gets them first, and now he has his, and now he can do what he wants with it. So the Gemara says he's very same. So again, that's one answer is that Rab Ami is taking it on behalf of the poor people. Very same. Another explanation. Adam Choshev Shiny. It's different with an important person such as Rab Ami. The Tanya, we learn in a Brisa. The Pasuk says about the Kohen Gadol. VaHaKohen Agadol Me'echav. The Kohen who's greater than his brothers, and that means that's the Kohen Gadol. SheGadol Me'echav. He should be greater than his brothers and his fellow Kohenim. Benoi in beauty, in handsomeness, BeChochma in wisdom, over Osher and in wealth. This way, in other words, the other Kohenim will look up to him. Achirim Omrim, Achirim, which usually means Rav Meir, says, on top of that, Minayin Shem Ein Loi, how do we know that if the Kohen does not have money, but he has all the other qualities, that he should make him a Kohen Gadol, She'echav HaKohen Megad Benoiso, that his fellow Kohenim should make him greater by giving them from their own money. So Talmud Lomar, therefore the Pasuk is HaKohen HaGadol Me'echav, and that means Gadlehu Mishel Echav, make him greater from what belongs to his brothers, that therefore his fellow Kohenim, his brother Kohenim, should be enriching him, and that way he's capable of being Kohen Gadol. So therefore, so the idea is, in other words, since Rab Ami is the Rosh Yeshiva, and they have the Schiyuv to make him greater, so there they have this field, the Gadla, the Lashira, it actually says to make him greater and richer, even to give him for himself, and certainly if money comes from an outside source, then he would be allowed to keep it for himself. A Braisa elsewhere tells an interesting thing in that connection, where it says that one time they appointed someone as Kohen Gadol named Pinchas Ish Chavda. So this Pinchas had all the qualities to be Kohen Gadol, except that he was poor. He worked as a stone cutter. He would work in a quarry, quarrying stones. So when they decided that he was going to be Kohen Gadol, they came over there, and all the Kohenim started throwing in gold coins until they filled up the quarry with coins, and they told this Pinchas that these are for you. So that was literally Gadleo Meshalachav. They enriched him from their own, and therefore now he's rich. Now he has a quarry full of gold coins, and therefore he was able to be Kohen Gadol. So the same thing over here. In other words, again, that Rab Ami did the same kind of thing. The Mishnah says, let's define, we've been talking about the Zroi L'Chayayim V'Keva, let's define what those
actually are. Why does a Kohen Gadol have to be rich?
Because that way the other Kohenim will look up to him. B'derech Chal, people look up to rich people, and that way they'll look up to him and respect him.
But where's the source for that in Torah?
That this is the source for Kohen Gadol Me'echav. In general, we have other examples.
Gadol Me'echav.
No, but we
doesn't
have,
mean Ashir Me'echav.
What it means, in other words, whatever it takes for people to look up to somebody is what we have to do. It applies over here. It applies also to a Navi, for example. It says it has to be rich, and one of the reasons is for the same reason in general. The fact is, people do look up to rich people, and you have to take that into consideration, and therefore, And then, and there, it's very nice to say that people should look up to him because of his qualities, but the fact is people do also look at the superficial as well, and you do have to take that into account. The Sefer HaChinuch even says that that's one of the reasons why a Kohen can't be a Baal Mum. You want the, you should ask, what's the problem? If he has a physical defect, where does Hashem not like such people? So the Chinuch says, again, it's not so much Hashem doesn't like them, Chas V'Shalom. Actually, on the contrary, the Tzemach Tzedek has in Derech Mitzvah explains that such an Neshamas of handicapped people actually come from a higher source. But the point is, the Chinuch says people tend to look up to somebody who is physically intact, and then you want people to look up to the Kohen and respect him and listen to what he has to say.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's go on. The Mishnah says, now that we've been talking the whole time about Zroya L'chayayim V'keva, let's talk about what actual parts of the animal those are. Ezehu HaZroya, what is defined as the Zroya? I mean, a perek shel akuba, from the joint of the Akuva, we've learned a number of times in our Masechta, you have what's called Akuva Hanim Keresim Arosh, the lower part of the animal's leg. As we've learned, an animal's leg is made up of three segments. So that lower segment from the joint over there, Ad Kaf Shoyad, until the shoulder blade. That part is called the Zroya. There are different opinions. There are different opinions among Rishonim about maybe are we talking about the same Arkuva, or we may be talking about a different joint. The Rambam in fact says over here that it means the upper two joints of the animal. Okay. In any case, so that's the Zroya. But who shall Nazir? The same thing. Whereas a Nazir, when we have the Zroya has to be cooked and then given to the Kohanim, so it would be the same kind. So it would be the same kind of thing. Or connect the Beregel Shoik, when it comes to the leg, the corresponding part, that joint or those joints is what's called Shoik. To the shlomim and the toida, where you have to wave the chos of a shoik and then give them to the kohen. So now you should know the shoik is those parts. So again, it would mean the upper two portions, or maybe only the upper one portion. One thing where this comes up actually, where the definition of shoik, an interesting thing, it comes up as far as the halachas of tznius. The Gemara tells us shoik be'isha erva, a woman's shoik is considered something that has to always be covered. So the question is, does shoik mean the shoik? Now, a person's leg consists of only two segments corresponding to the upper and middle segments of an animal's leg. So are we saying the shoik consists of only the upper part, or does it consist of the lower part as well? And that's negeya. In other words, do women have to wear skirts that go all the way down to the floor, or is it enough that they just wear skirts below the knee? The accepted compromise among the poskim is that she has to wear a skirt to below the knee and has to cover her knees even when she's sitting, but then the rest of it she has to wear socks or tights or stockings or something like that to cover the rest of her legs. Anyway, so that also comes up as far as what Zroya and what Shoik mean in this connection. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda has a different definition. Shoik mena perach shal akuva ad soivach shal regel. Rabbi Yehuda says that no, the Shoik is defined from that joint of the ankle joint of the animal to the knee joint. Soivach shal regel literally means the thickness of the the leg. So in other words, he would say that it means only the middle section. So that's the Zroya, according to the different opinions. Ezo lechi, what is the definition of lechi? Mina perek shal lechi ad pika shal galgeres, from the joint of the jaw until the pika of the windpipe. We learned much earlier in the Masechta that the windpipe has rings of cartilage around it, and the top one in medical ease, it's called the cricoid cartilage, surrounds the windpipe completely, as opposed to the other ones surround it only partially. So then, and its shape, pika is literally like a ball like thing that you find at the end of a spindle when you're spinning thread or yarn or whatever. You have a device for the purpose called a spindle, and has a round thing on the top of it, which is called a pica. So therefore, so we call that part of the windpipe, we call it the pica, because it's round like that.
So there was some discussion, and there are different rishonim. Does it mean specifically the lower jaw, or does it actually mean the upper? Does it mean the upper jaw as well? Okay. So the Gemara says Tana Rabban. We learn in the Braise. So when it says Hazroya, it says Zazroya Yamin. It means specifically the right leg. After Omer Zazroya Yamin, you're saying that it means the right leg. Oyanel Zazroya Smol. How do you know? Maybe it means the left front leg. Talmud Omer Hazroya. That is why the pasuk says Hazroya the leg. So the Gemara says my Talmuda. How exactly are you learning? How does the word Hazroya specifically mean the right one? And the answer is Kidu Omar Rava, like Rava said earlier in Omer Sechta when we talked about Gidanosha Hayorech. We said that Rav Yehuda holds. And only one thigh, Gidanosha, applies to, because he said, because the pasuk says, Hayorech, the thigh, and Rabba had explained, it means Hamiumenes Chibayorech, the right one, the most distinguished one of the thighs, and therefore that would be the right, because in Torah, generally the right is preferred over the left. Hachanami Hazroya Hamiumen Chibazroya, the same way, when it says over here, that he should give the Kohen Hazroya, then it would mean the right one. Okay? So now, but it says Hazroya, Vahalachayayim, Vahakeva, so why does it have the haze over there? By the Zroya, we have to understand, because you have one on each side, so we have to specify which one. What about, by the way, Tosfos points out, even according to the Chachamim, who disagreed about Gidanosha, and they learned the word Hayorech differently, they said that it means that the Gidanosha, the branches of it, spread throughout the whole thigh. Here, it's impossible to say that, and necessarily, therefore, they have to agree that it means the right thigh. Okay, Val Chayayim Lamai also. What about when it says Val Chayayim? What does the hay over there come to tell us? It means Lahavit Semer Shabarosh Kvasim. It comes to include also the wool on the head of a lamb. So in other words, if you're shechting a lamb and you're giving the Chayayim from the lamb to the Kohen, like we said before, you don't strip off the skin and you don't strip off the hair, you give it to him with the wool. V'seyosh V'skam Kiyoshim, or similarly the hair on the beard of a goat. So you have to give that to the Kohen as well. And again, you know, what is he going to do with it? Obviously, he's not going to eat it, but he can use it for other purposes. V'akeva l'may osa, when it says the hay by hakeva, what does that come to include? It means v'hovi chelev, shal gabi hakeva, means to include the chelev that's on the keva, that you have to give that to the kohen as well. Again, he can't eat that chelev, but at least he can use it for other purposes. V'cholav shabasei hakeva, as well as milk that's inside it, which as we learned earlier in the Masechta, you could use it as a starter for cheese. There was a different gears, a different understanding actually that the word is not cholov, but rather chelov, and when chelov is inside the keva. So therefore, so it means, in other words, yeah, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, the keva has two curved sides, and one has, and both of them have fat on them, and therefore we mean the fat on both of those parts. The Amr Rabbi Shurban Levi, as in fact Rabbi Shurban Levi says, Kohenim nogu v'ayin yofa, the Kohenim have taken on a minig of being generous with that chelev and the milk, v'nasnu l'baylem, and they give it back to the owner. So in other words, the owner will give them the keva with that, and the Kohen will say, you know what, you can keep the chelev, and you can keep the curdled milk. So time of the nogu, so we see, why does it belong to the owner? Because the Kohenim have developed a minhag to give it back and to be generous. Holoi nogu didehu, implying that not, it belongs to the actual Kohen, it belongs to the Kohen, and that we learn from the hay of Hakeva. And a different understanding, there are Mephoshim who understand that what it means is that the Gemara is saying, there are some places where they have the minhag to do that, and other places where they don't, and each place it goes according to the local minhag. Okay. The Gemara says, why are dafka these parts given to the Kohen? So the Gemara says, Doshe chamures hoyu oimim. People who would darshin chamures would give an explanation. Now she says chamures means psukim where the reason for them is obscure. Tosfos gives a different explanation from the Aruch in the name of Rav Sadia Gaon that it means they would darshin things in accordance with the story. And they explain that there's an expression that people would say, machamroch, like in English, you say, how are you doing? In Aramaic, they would say, machamroch. So chamuros then means things that are, means events, things that happened. Anyway. Another explanation we showed him say is that the word choymer means like a cluster of jewels, so it means that they would darshan psukim like jewels. Anyway, so they explain why are dafka these three parts given to the Kohen. Is hazroya kineged ayad, the zroy, why do we give the zroya to the Kohenim, is corresponding to the hand of Pinchas, where he killed Zimri and Cosby, and then so now it's not just descendants of Pinchas who get the matanis, it's all Kohenim do, but what we're saying What we're saying that because of his bravery, because of his zealousness for Hashem, therefore he won this gift for the Kohenim, with it because of Vaishanema, Vachinu Omer, as a positive, he took a spear in his hand. So because of that, the Kohenim got the hand, the full leg of the animal. And that would also explain why Davka it's the right one, because it was his right hand that he used for the purpose. And Marsha points out the positive says Mishpat HaKohenim, this is the law of the Kohenim, so therefore we're saying it's like they deserve it by law because of what Pinchas did. Ulchayim keneged tefillah, the fact that we give l'chayim corresponds to the fact that he davened. V'cheinu omer, as we find a positive in Tillim, when it redescribes the story, v'yamed Pinchas v'yifalo, Pinchas got up and davened. So v'yifalo can mean that he executed judgment, but the Gemara also explains that it means he davened. Keva kamashma, and keva means exactly what it sounds like, as the keva was involved over the v'cheinu omer v'esa ishao kavasa, as the pasuk says that he pierced them through the Zimri and Cosby, and the woman into her kavasa, into her stomach, as it actually says on the pasuk over there. That way, so they're attached together. Everybody could see that there was a good reason he killed them because of the serious aveira that they were doing, because of the znus that they were doing. So therefore, because of that, the keva is given to the kohen. So that's one explanation why the Zeroy L'Chayayim Bekeva. Now, so going back to, we said one reason, so how do we know that you give Davka the right leg? Is because it says Hazroya. The Tana, my
Zeroy. We have to, can we continue?
Well, we're not going to have time because tomorrow is Yom Tov, but we're going to be literally just about 2 minutes. We'll finish up in about 2 minutes. So the Tana Maisila Mahocha, Tana brings from here Shoyka Yomin, when it says by a Shlomim that you have to give the right side, you have to give the right side to the Kohen, Amy of a Shoyka Yomin, so you would only know over there that it means the right. Zroya Mokdoshin Minolon, Minayin, how do we know that the Zroya of the Nozir's Korban also has to be the right one? Tavalama Truma, therefore the Torah calls it Truma. And that means, in other words, that it has to be the right one. It's that you have to pick it up and you have to wave it. Zroya Cholin Minayin. How do we know the same thing applies to the leg, to the full leg of the Cholin? Tamad Lama Titnu. Therefore, the pasuk also says Titnu. You should give, referring to the Matanos. And therefore, so we learn from that all of them are the right one. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Zehu Lechi. We said what is considered to be the jaw is Minaperek Shal Lechi Vad Pika Shal Galgeres, from the joint of the jaw until the kicker of the cricoid cartilage, until the top of the windpipe. So the Gemara says Vahatanya, the Gemara asks Vahatanya, don't we learn in a Braisa? Noitlo Beis Shchita Ima. They take the jaw together with the place of shechting with it. Now the place of the shechting is further down in the throat. And the answer was like Kasha Rabbanan Bahar Rab Chanina ben Antignus, because there's different opinions, Rabbanan and Rab Chanina ben Antignus, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, about what part of the windpipe can you shecht in. Titania, we learn a Brisa, Mugremes Psula, when you do Hagroma, if you shecht in the wrong part of the neck, then it's possible. Hadram, Chanina ben Antignus, Amugremes, Sheikh Shera. On the other hand, Rab Chanina ben Antignus gave testimony about Mugremes, that it is kosher, meaning or something that the Chachamim would consider to be Mugremes, he said is kosher, namely when you're shechting in the Tabas HaGdola, in this great ring, which therefore he considers that to be a kosher place of Shechita. So he would say that you take the place of the Shechita with it, because according to him, that's a valid place of the Shechita. Ibori Seima, or another answer, Hova HaRabbanan, both this Mishnah and the Braisa are according to the Chachamim, or my Ima, what does he mean when he says, the place of the Shechita with it, means Ima de Behema, means that the place of the Shechita remains with the animal. So Faket, you don't give it to the Kohen, that you leave with the rest of the animal, and the owner keeps that, as opposed to the Lechi, which is above that, which he gives to the Kohen. Adon Allah HaZor El Val Chayayim.